Welcome to the Elk Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. I want to talk about a little bit. This is another topic that showed up a bit in the Analytics of Dynasty group me chat. I had to get kind of the sub chat on some strategic questions. And it's kind of a combo, like a little bit of a duo question. And so I kind of wanted to address it, right? I think it's applicable to all of us, but it is specifically focused when you've got a team that's not good, right? So it might be an orphan adopt. It might be a team that you haven't done a good job with, right? I have one of those right now where I'm just looking at it and every time I'm done looking at it, I don't want to look myself in the mirror for a couple of days. Like, that's kind of it. And so, kind of trying to figure out a way through that, right? I've spent a lot of time trying to figure that team out, and then it becomes a bit demoralizing, and then, you got to kind of circle your way back and, kind of work through it, right? So, so this is meant to be a bit of a guide on kind of how we should be kind of processing all of these, right? How should we be, fixing our problems, right? Kind of addressing teams that are bad, right? Whether you ran it into the ground, whether you adopted it as an orphan, right? Whether it just didn't meet expectations, right? Kind of how you fix that, right? So I think the number one thing that I do in these particular situations is I really like to think about how my team's strengths, right? So I go back and I kind of look at last year. I go and I look at a lot of the, some of the point scoring, for example, right? Some of the all play stuff I think can be pretty helpful. And you can go back and look and kind of get an idea of how your team did, right? You can get an idea of where your where your strengths were, right, where your weaknesses were, and a true assessment of how good your team was, right? I think it does, in some ways, you get, just by looking at the standings, you can get a little bit clouded, right? You can get, you can get it where you're not, where you're subject to some variance, right? Or you're subject to, you ran good, right? Maybe you ran a win good, a win bad, and sort of your good luck, bad luck stats, those sorts of things, right? So I start right back, kind of go to my all play record, and I start right from there, right? So the team that I am particularly despondent about, for example, was sixth in all play record at 56.7% all play record. So again, I kind of look at that and I'm like, all right, it's not horrible. It's sixth, right? It's really, I would say, pretty close with, it's solidly between 5 and 7. And then, sandwich kind of tightly in there, right? Obviously 6 is between 5 and 7, but, it's a pretty tight group there. And then there's a gap on either side, right? So 5, 6, 7 is kind of a tier of its own, if you will. And then it's really a step up to 4, another step up to 3, and then 1 and 2 are pretty close. And then kind of below that, on the bottom side, the 11th and 12th teams are really bad. And then I would say, 8 through 10 are relatively close, right? So you kind of get an assessment of where you kind of lie, right? So with me, I'm kind of in a spot where I'm not terrible. I'm stuck in the mud, right? I think this team is worse than it is because it feels worse than it is. It's probably okay directionally, honestly. It's probably okay directionally. I'm using this as an example, and I'm kind of talking to A, this team, and B, the teams that might even feel worse than this, right? I think this team is right directionally. I think it's wrong in just the talent, right? I just don't think it's good enough. And I do think that kind of pops up when you start looking kind of the next step of what I kind of think about when I'm kind of going through and assessing my teams is, right, evaluate your team from kind of the top down in terms of how you did last year, right? Then I like to really look at some things and really go through like 3 to 5 things that I think could make my team better. 3 to 5 things I think could make my team worse, right? So for example, on this team, I had Stafford and Russell Wilson right there. Some better play from them, I think, makes me better. I have, a guy like Tony Pollard on this team who I think could give me an additional step up. Right? Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I didn't get much out of. You know, I got some decent running back play last year, but not really a ton there. Outside of like Josh Jacobs, right? It was a lot of injury away guys. Pollard was fine. But outside of that, a lot of injury away guys. I've got 107 and 108. And a rookie draft. So those are really the picks there. And then I've got outside of that, I don't have a pick until the 4th round. Made a couple of trades, included them in it. And so, still suffering a bit from that. I think I traded up one and then I gave a 3rd, I think, at some point last offseason. So I think I went from 2nd to 1st in a trade. So I got a mid 1st out of that. And then, so I don't have a 2nd, don't have a 3rd, but I've got 2 4ths. So 2 1sts, 2 4ths. And then I look at the receiver position, right? How can I really get better? Like Amari Cooper, Lockett, Allen Robinson, Michael Thomas, one of those guys kind of working out would make some sense, right? But I do have problems there, right? And that's not, ideally, Cooper's a good 2, Lockett's a good 3, and then Thomas and Allen Robinson kind of a good 4 or 5, a good 4 or 5 combo that you could maybe, you're kind of hoping for, a half season worth of starts and you can kind of figure out from there, right? That's kind of your play there. And then down from there, I've got, how can I get better at tight end, a healthy Goddard, a higher volume Kittle season, a healthy higher volume Joku season, right? So kind of an idea, again, that's more than 3 to 5 things, but I would challenge you to really think, list them, right? How would you get better? How would I get worse? Well, I mean, Jacobs playing worse, I think is he really dragged me, right? Him and kind of the tight end efficiency dragged me a pretty long ways, a pretty grim roster at quarterback in particular. There was some zombie quarterback play going on this team last year. So that's one thing that could really hurt. Russell Wilson or Matthew Stafford not taking a bounce back, right? That's certainly a problem. That's another thing that could be a problem. Is Pollard healthy? Right? That certainly could be a potential problem. Do I get a bounce back from Fant? Like, is he a real asset? Kind of where am I at with him? I think is a real question. So that's kind of where I'm at, right? Do I think I can be a buy team as I see it right now? I mean, I got to figure out a way to get really better, right? I think this team is a middling team that could trend bad. I think probably the positional efficiency of like the tight ends is probably going to keep me from being really bad. I've got problems, right? I've certainly got problems. And I would say if you looked at last year's stats, right, you looked at last year's power ranking and you compared them to the actual team quality of this year, you would say, okay, like that team last year is better than what you would look at going forward. Okay, what do I mean by that? Well, for us, right, we tend to, there's a couple of markers that we use, right? We tend to use, top 10 guys, super max guys, right, the combination there. And then we kind of use, star assets, right, which would be basically your guys, at kind of the top of the other positions, and then you're basically non-elite quarterbacks, right? You're very, you're kind of very good tier. Together, Supermax and Star Assets, as we sit here right now, there's 30 of them. There's 30 total. And so that's, the top, where I use that kind of top 30 number, right? That's where that number kind of comes from. I use it as sort of a, when I'm just sort of using it in conversation, right? The top 30 is kind of an estimate. I'm really, when I say that, you can hear that as being super max and star players, right? That's when I say top 30 assets or top 30 players, I am really talking about super max and star players to people that don't subscribe to AOD, right? Or that don't really, that it's too much time to explain what a star asset is, so I just call them top 30 assets, right? So that's kind of when I use that moniker, I kind of think about that. But I do think, I just say right now, how many top 30 guys do you have in your roster? I have one. Again, it's Kittle, right? That's not good enough. That is just not good enough. So that number, and I think really to feel good about your team direction, you got to have three. I think you got to have four, right? And so as I sit here right now, I'm like, all right, I got to figure out a way to get more of them. I have to figure out a way to get more meaningful assets. As I sit here right now, it's probably a quarterback. And I got to figure out a way. I'd really like my Stafford Russell Wilson decision to be kind of my 2-3 decision instead of my 1-2. I think that's very easily the quickest way that I could get to, a step higher. Right? I think that's certainly the first step that I would need. Okay. The other thing that I need to do is like figure out ways to make that trade when it becomes available. Right. So one of the things that I constantly stress, and again, early in the offseason, I think it's really important, is you get there's a lot of stuff that happens. There's a lot of there's injuries, right? There might be suspension risks. There might be players that get players drafted over them. There might be, guys that seem like they face a lot of competition that might be losing their jobs, right? All those types of things. I want the flexibility to be able to get those guys, especially when they are at a discount. And so how do we do that, right? Pick flexibility, I think, makes a lot of sense, right? Having liquid assets makes a lot of sense to potentially go out and address those guys. I also think it makes sense to have a tolerance for risk, right? When your team is middling or when your team isn't that good, right, you should be embracing high-risk guys, right? Because guys that have a wide range of outcomes, you kind of need the ceiling of that range to really make a difference, and being in on them, I think, is really critical. So that would be kind of my pitch for being aggressive, right? And being, preparing yourself in a way that you can be aggressive when the time strikes. Okay, so when if it's a, Tyreek Hill's getting arrested type situation, right, from years ago, a buy low on Deshaun Watson, right, kind of a longer term play. There was some Zeke stuff years ago, right? Again, he returned plenty of value after that. He had that kind of that really bad offseason, but dropped in price, returned plenty of value, right? Kind of being in on those situations and buying, certainly buying low and striving for upside in those situations makes a ton of sense. As well as being in on, this isn't just in the offseason, right? Being prepared for slow start guys. Right, being prepared to be buying low on slow start guys, right? Constantly sort of be, how am I going to do this, right? How am I planning ahead, right? So, and a lot of times I like it for getting liquid picks into the future, because hey, week one, week two, week three, I get slow start guys, can I give a couple of future thirds for a slow starting wide receiver, can I give a second for a slow starting running back, can I make this deal at some point when it's more advantageous for me, and I am buying the quote risky profile, where it has much more ceiling, right? That's the way I kind of think about these. And so constantly sort of be in that mindset, right? Can I get future picks? Can I sort of get that? Not necessarily because I want to sit on future picks, and draft them, but I want to have them available as liquid capital when these situations arise. Okay. So that's one of the things I really think about, right? Again, how do I get, top 30 assets? You're going to have to buy them low, buy them at a discount, kind of buy some risk, right? That's a good way to get started. And then you can reassess, right? You can reevaluate, you can, package up, right? You can sort of do all those good tactics to put yourself in a better position later on. Okay. So that's that. So again, how top 30 assets, how are you going to get them? Kind of planning those ahead, I think, is super, super important when you're looking at these things. I think the other thing that you should really be concentrating on is roster construction. Okay, how do I, and this goes kind of hand in hand with getting liquid picks, right? how do I turn this roster into something that can get me elite players at, in the future, right? I think, you know, cashing in kind of low ceiling, you know, flip wide receivers, right? Those low ceiling guys that poor odds, but the market likes them. You know, how can I turn a third to a second, right? Or get a straight second for the player, right? How can I do those things? I think just in the importance of sort of getting them or consolidating them also opens up your potential to optimize your roster, right? To get more running backs, right? To get more backup quarterbacks, to get more tight ends in your premium leagues, right? To keep addressing premium positions, right? If you can get depth at a premium position, that's a really good way to make some, you know, make some trades, right? That's a, you know, having premium players, you know, premium positions to sell people, that can always put you in a, you know, in a better package type situation. So that's certainly something that I would advocate. So those are really the things that I'm constantly looking at, right? Again, those are the things that you know, constantly trying to strive for high ceiling, right? Constantly trying to strive for high ceiling when I'm stuck in the middle, and being willing to take some swings, and just preparing to take those swings. Okay. So those are kind of things I'm thinking about. When should you kind of kick the can down the road and say, I'm going to rebuild? Well, I think you got to be really careful with doing that right now. And I think you get just so many people are going to turn assets right now into, you know, or players right now that could contend into picks because, oh, I you know, I can't possibly roster, you know, Alvin Kamara. So I got to trade him for a couple of thirds, right? The problem with that is a couple of things. Number one, there's so much unpredictability from now until the season starts that you are going to go through different phases. Right? You're going to go through different ups and downs with your team, ups and downs with your players that you're not necessarily going to be able to predict them now. Right? We could go through, and I did this exercise last year where I went through and I should bring it back up, but I just like took headlines from basically Roto World or NBC, I guess NBC Edge or whatever it is now. And I just took them from like March and kind of reread them in August, right? And it was just crazy things all over the place, up, down, you know, this player getting traded, this player getting signed by this one, didn't end up happening, you know, he goes back to this team. And, you know, it's just all these things that just kept changing and changing and changing and changing. That happens throughout the off season, right? That happens. That'll happen all off season. And so, you know, being, you know, always kind of keeping your options open, I think is really important because, you know, you trade Kamara right now. And what happens if like, if you land, you know, I'll use my example for a second, a couple of mid first, what happens if I land two guys that are really, really productive, right? What happens if I take, I don't know, a day two running back and a first round wide receiver, and all of a sudden in you know, it's October 1st, and I'm 3-1, and those guys are really performing at the high end of their position, right? Well, if I have a Kamara type, you know, and I've traded him for a couple of thirds, I don't have the ability to sort of turbocharge that roster. I don't have the ability to maximize that breakout. And so I find what a lot of people end up doing is trading these guys for, you know, trading good veteran players for picks because they're saying, oh, I can't get stuck holding the bag on this player. The problem that is, you know, stems from that is, A, you're not getting more security a lot of times, right? If you're trading it for a couple of thirds, right? If you're trading a player that can really make a difference in your lineup for a couple of thirds or, you know, later a contending second next year, whatever, right? It, you know, if you're doing that right now, you're selling it into a market that's not buying those types of players, right? Those trades are always made best, you know, in season, you know, before the trade deadline or when you have teams actually buying, right? That's when those trades of contending players ends up being more useful, right? Because people are willing to push chips in. And again, if those players are performing well, right, you see a rise in their production, you see a rise in their trade value when, you know, when people are actually buying them, right? That's a better opportunity to sell them than just right now, where people are kind of playing in the long-term dynasty lens and aren't prioritizing the 2023 production as much, right? So I think that you got to be really careful about capitulating, right? You got to be really careful about capitulating and saying, I don't think I can actually contend with this team. I got to sell off these potentially good assets, because again, you don't necessarily know what's going to come down the pike. So again, it's a balance. It is always a balance in terms of, you know, preserving some pick flexibility into the future, but also having, you know, players that can help you contend, right? So I tend to, in that conversation, I tend to prioritize profiles that look like good contending or good productive profiles that are maybe falling in price over. I prioritize holding them as opposed to, you know, low base rates, bats, guys who haven't hit, right? Low pedigree guys that people might have a little bit higher expectations for, right? I think of a guy like Isaiah Hodges, for example, right? I'd much rather, let's just take him and Michael Thomas, right? For example, you know, just sort of use those two guys. Isaiah Hodgins, right? The idea of him being long-term viable, pretty low, right? It's historically not a great bet. It's a low pedigree bet. You know, they've brought in some additional guys, right? I think they could be in the market for more. It's a low probability bet that he's going to be a real producer. Okay. Michael Thomas on the flip side, right? He's really struggled to stay healthy. And if you don't have, right, if he's not healthy, he's not going to be very productive for you. And he's not going to be very valuable for you, right? Those two things are certainly true. However, like, we know that if he's healthy, he can be really good. And frankly, if he's going to be healthy and productive, right, there's probably going to be a better market to sell him. So would I rather get caught holding the bag on him and say, like, listen, I'd rather take that swing, or would I rather take the swing on Isaiah Hodges, right? I'd much rather take the swing on Michael Thomas because, A, his production odds are better, right? There's a better chance of him performing meaningful production, right? High-end targets, right? We've seen him be elite. And, you know, he's probably at the low. It's a very low risk for that amount, for that bet, as opposed to a guy like Isaiah Hodgins where, you know, it's not a huge benefit to the risk you're taking, right? And so if you can cash in, you can get picks for a player like that. I really like that more so than, you know, cashing in a veteran who has elite production in his background because you're scared that they might lose value, right? Because a lot of times them losing value, it's not actually getting you a more safe, stable pick. All right, so that's kind of the way that I would sort of balance those two things. At the running back position, I think it's, you know, what looks more like an injury away type, and how can you sort of replicate that down the line? Is turning Jamal Williams into a future second, for example? Does that give you an opportunity to potentially put that second in a package? And can you backfill with something that looks a lot like Jamal Williams at some point here in the, you know, in the coming months ahead of the season, right? Those would be kind of the things that I would that's like the type of thing, right? Samaj Perine, right? Those types of players, good injury away types, right? Is there a chance you can sort of move up, right? Selling them, right? Package them. Or if you are, if you can't necessarily put them in a spot for a package to get you a core or a star asset, can you turn them into picks that you could potentially do that with in the future, right? Those are the kinds of things that I'm trying to accomplish when I'm looking at these teams, okay? When you sort of are faced with these problems, right? When you're sort of faced with these sort of stuck in the middle situations, I always like to think, instead of instead of sort of selling off, right, is there a way to buy with these assets? Right? I always think, number one, you can kind of sell off at the wide receiver position, right? Can you sort of arb down at wide receiver? That's usually a really good place to start to try and extract some value, not necessarily give up as much production in the short term, and harness, you know, that roster value into a better asset, maybe at a premium position. Okay. The other thing too that I think is where a lot of people go wrong is you get to a spot where a Keenan Allen becomes available, right? You get to a spot where Mike Evans becomes available. And you know, a lot of rebuilding teams will think about, oh, I don't want to be stuck with these guys. However, they can kind of eat innings for you while you're filling out long term. I think a lot of dynasty GMs will think, hey, I need to be in the business of young, long term wide receivers, and if I don't get there, right, I am not truly a contending team. That's nice, but it's nice for rich teams, right? Again, I've sort of used the analogy that, that young, high-priced wide receivers in Superflex, in tight end premium leagues, those guys are really like the, you know, kind of the luxury accessories in a house, right? They're like the luxury cabinet handles, the luxury like doorknobs, right? The luxury, decorations. But if you don't have a roof, right, they're useless. And I think a lot of dynasty GMs will say, all right, I'm going to try and rebuild, get younger at wide receiver, and then rebuild the rest of my roster. I think that's typically a mistake. And I think you can borrow from that youth at wide receiver, you know, get similar type of production, right? There's similar production profiles available that are older, borrow some of that roster value and potentially get upgrades. So that would be something I'd really be hunting out. A couple things when you're thinking about retooling, again, I'm always kind of pushing in for this year, right? Especially as I'm sitting here right now, even if I don't necessarily think I'm going to be an elite team, how can I make this team a playoff team, right? How can I be in at least that I'm making a decision about whether I want to lean into this team, week 10, right? I sort of want to be at that spot where I have options versus declaring my path now. And I've reduced my doors, right? I've reduced my potential options. I've reduced my exits, right? If I'm thinking about, you know, kind of trying to get out of a building, like during a fire, like, do I want to go down the narrow sort of path of like, all right, well, I'll go through one closed hallway and hope I can get out the one door? Or do I want to sort of have a hallway that's a lot of open doors and I could potentially get out a number of different ways, right? I want to head towards the place where I have a lot of options. That's something I think about with Dynasty a lot, right? How do I sort of continue to keep my options open in case things break my way, right? And maybe they won't break my way, but if they do, I want to be able to act on that. And if they don't, then I want to be able to make an informed decision on when to pivot, right? So those are really the things that I like to think about. Again, leaning into the contending now, and we'll see, right? We can reevaluate in 6 months. We can evaluate next week, right? We can evaluate all throughout. We can just kind of keep, we can kind of keep updating to what new information that we have. Don't underestimate elite profiles is something I think is really key too. So don't underestimate, you know, the resiliency of a guy of a profile like Mike Evans, right? That's typically a pretty long-term good bet. Even as he gets late 20s into his early 30s, like that's typically a good, you know, he's got all the markers of kind of a long-term, like can play into his 30s type of player. Again, maybe it's not necessarily top 5 to 8 ceiling at wide receiver, but certainly in that wide receiver 1 through wide receiver 2 innings eater range of the position. Guys like Keenan Allen, again, he's a little bit older as well. Hopkins is one that's discounted, right? Be willing to bet on elite profiles that are discounted, right? Be willing to bet on those guys, especially when they're cheap, especially when they're costing non-first, those types of things, right? Those are very typically really good bets. The last thing I'll kind of leave you with in this, and again, this is easier said than done. Okay, so don't. And this can be hard, but I think it's a mindset you have to think this way. I think a lot of people want to rebuild or retool their roster through depth. I reject that. Depth isn't scarce. Depth is something you can always acquire if done right. You know, I kind of talked about this last week. You know, how do you aging rosters, for example? Like, go back and listen to that kind of some of the stuff, tactics I sort of talked about that. Like, that's kind of how you deal with depth. Elite players can really, you know, if you have, and again, just use the math on this, right? The math on this isn't particularly difficult, okay? If you've got three or four, let's say you got four top 30 guys, okay? And then the rest of your roster's replacement level. Let's just assume that for a second. Okay, a replacement roster is going to win about three games, right? That's three, you know, in this, it's probably three and a half, right? In the, historically, it was three when it was a 13-game season, so it's three and, you know, a little bit more. So call it maybe three and a half wins. Let's call it three and a half wins. And, right, if you have four guys that are a win and a half over replacement, right, all of a sudden that is a, instead of a 3.5 win team, what it actually is a 9.5 win team. Okay, right? Because four guys at a win and a half is six wins, and you take that and you add it to the 3.5 that's replacement level, and boom, right? There's an upgrade. Get 3 1.5 win guys is a playoff appearance, right? It's not nine wins, but three is basically eight wins. That's a really good chance to get in the playoffs, right? So shooting high at those positions, right? Shooting for guys that can, you know, be one warp, 1.5 warp guys. Rebuilding through the top of your roster, it's a lot easier. It's going to improve your odds a lot quicker. I see people selling from the top 30 of their roster to try and rebuild depth. That's the wrong approach. You can always rebuild depth. You know, it's nice when you can arb, right? Those are good situations where you can arb down and acquire additional assets, additional flexibility, while not necessarily taking a huge bump. But I like to do that when those are like top 50 guys. Can you arb from top, you know, from player 50 to player 75 and really get a really good upgrade, right? Can you arb from, you know, 60 to 100 and get a good upgrade, right? That's places I'd much rather arb than to arb, you know, player, you know, 15 to player 40, right? Historically, that's a huge difference, much bigger difference than a 25, 30 move, spot move down, you know, in the, let's say, from 70 to, you know, 100, right? In that range. Like, the difference up at the top of the board, much, much different in terms of odds, in terms of likelihood to actually impact your team. So, again, I think building up through those guys, right, sort of starting the fire at the top of your roster, you know, that's – you're going to be in a better position quicker. Right. And again, is it necessarily going to be a way that you, are you going to love players 8 through 25 on your roster? Like, I rarely like those guys, right? It's not, you shouldn't feel a ton of conviction on those guys because the hit rates are pretty low. But I think if you're constantly sort of moving from those guys and moving up, you're going to change your odds. And the difference between a guy at 100 and a guy at 180 isn't that much different historically, right, in terms of moving the needle. So constantly be okay with, you know, hey, I can take sort of shots in this range. A lot of it's more volume than anything kind of outside the top 100. But if I can get 3, 4, 5 guys in the top 20, 30, 40, right, those are guys that can really, really move the needle for me. So constantly be thinking about that, pushing in that direction, and refuse the urge to trade out and take guys that are, and refuse the urge to take guys that are depth for guys that are high-end players. All right, so that'll do it here for this edition. Again, I hope you kind of drew from this, you know, you're constantly trying to shoot for higher ceiling on your teams, you know, really kind of smart discount options, right? Smart risks, right? High reward type bets. I think those can be really helpful. Refuse the urge to sort of kick in the can now and build through depth, right? But try and preserve as much flexibility as you can. Again, it's art. There's an art to this. Preserve flexibility. You know, can you get two bets instead of one? All of those things really important. And you know, and constant and refuse the urge to sell elite players for depth. Right, that is the number one problem on how to not turn around a team that's sort of either stuck in the middle or at the bottom of the roster or at the bottom of the league. Okay, so that'll do it here for this edition. All right, until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.